a young lady left the innocent pleasures of girlhood and was introduced into adult society. That was before the innocent pleasures of girlhood came to include 3 abortions, several long visits to $1,000-a-day drug rehab clinics, and a summer vacation spent following the Grateful Dead tour. Nowadays, the purpose of debuts is to show middle-aged bachelors how rich you are in hopes of tricking one of them into taking a maniac daughter off your hands. A debutante party is basically a bar mitzvah with sex in the parking lot. The same rules of egregious display, inedible food, and ridiculous expense are enforced. Presents are not given, however, and inasmuch as debuts are waspy activities, presents like having a tree planted in Israel might actually be unwelcome. The proper behavior at a debutante party is for the young lady in whose honor the party is being given to act like a bitch, and for all the young men her age to get drunk and throw each other in the country club swimming pool. There are some very definite rules about throwing people into swimming pools. Never throw anyone into a pool unless he is wearing something expensive that will be ruined by the water. The whole point of throwing people in swimming pools is to recapture a sort of Kennedy administration insouciance. Kennedy administration insouciance presupposes such great wealth that things like rust-jammed Cartier wristwatches are expected to be laughed off as a good joke in the morning. Never throw anyone into an empty pool unless you don't like him very much. Never throw a waiter into the pool. This is excessively democratic and a total waste of all the drinks he was carrying on his tray. Never throw the debutante's mother into the pool unless you plan to have sex with her in the parking lot later. Never throw anyone into the pool if she's in her car. This brings back bad memories for the Kennedy family and will wreck all the insouciance for sure. An additional difference between a bar mitzvah and a debutante party is that the hora is never danced at a debut. The bunny hop is, however. Bunny hops are not considered any fun unless they go through the country club kitchen, breaking lots of dishes and in one door and out the other of someone's BMW convertible. The purpose of the bunny hop, like the purpose of many group activities, is to do extensive damage that cannot be attributed to any one person. A more sophisticated version of the bunny hop is the conga line, where plate glass windows may be more easily kicked out. Cocktail parties. A cocktail party is what you call it when you invite everyone you know to come over to your house at 6 p.m., put cigarettes out on your rug, and leave at 8 to go somewhere more interesting for dinner without inviting you. Cocktail parties are very much on their way out among rug-owning, hungry, snubbed people. Another reason for the cocktail party's decreasing popularity is that modern health-conscious people do not drink as much as they used to. It interferes with their drug rehabilitation program. But cocktail parties are still useful if you have a lot of cheap liquor and friends you want to get rid of. Much more chic than a cocktail party is an invitation for people to come over for drinks after dinner. This makes your guests think they're going to meet people more important than they are. People important enough to be invited to dinner itself. With social status thus assured, the wise host dines alone. Testimonial dinners. Testimonial dinners and other public banquets are versions of the formal dinner party. The difference is that a few particular fools are singled out and made to sit on the dais. The dais is a great place for honored women guests to show everyone their underpants. Customarily, there are speeches at testimonial dinners. These speeches are read from the phone book. At least the author believes this to be the case. They sound as though they're read from the phone book, and that's about how much attention anyone pays to them. The important part of a testimonial dinner is the giving of toasts. Toasts should progress gradually in the outlandishness of their praise. Early in the proceedings, a simple, "A credit to his county Republican organization," will do fine. Save until late in the evening such toasts as, "Here's to Frank, a hell of a pal, every gal's guy and every guy's gal. He's a brick, he's a topper, he can sing, he can dance, and he frightens the horses when he lowers his pants. Ceremonies that have not recrudesced because we never succeeded in getting rid of them in the first place. Christmas. Christmas begins about the 1st of December with an office party, and ends when you finally realize what you spent around April 15th of the next year. Christmas has replaced Lent as a period of penance. Christmas is when you punish yourself for having spent 11 months claiming to be friends with a pack of useless and nasty people you hardly know. Now you're forced to go out and buy each of them an expensive gift. In return, you'll receive a dozen bottles of strawberry-flavored wine cooler and a pair of Louis Vuitton earmuffs. There is a remarkable breakdown of taste and intelligence at Christmas time. Mature, responsible grown men wear neckties made out of holly leaves and drink alcoholic beverages with raw egg yolks and cottage cheese in them. Otherwise reasonable adult women start hinting to their dates about emerald bracelets before they've even been French kissed. The only thing that's even slightly interesting about Christmas is that office party. It's nice to see the people at work admitting that they're drunk and not getting anything done. The worst part of Christmas is dinner with the family, when you realize how truly mutated and crippled is the gene stock from which you sprang. It's customarily said that Christmas is done for the kids. Considering how awful Christmas is and how little our society really likes children, this must be true. Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a sort of trial run for Christmas, especially for Christmas dinner. Thanksgiving is when that mysterious, large and tasteless animal, supposed to be a bird but more closely resembling a stewed beach ball, is first placed upon the table. This will be sliced apart and put on everyone's plate, and then collected from the plates and put back together and served again at Christmas. A number of other remarkable things show up in holiday dinners, such as dressing, which is a loaf of bread that got hit by a truck full of animal innards, and pies made out of something called mince, although if anyone has ever seen a mince in its natural state, he did not live to tell about it. Thanksgiving is so called because we are all thankful that it comes only once a year. New Year's. The proper behavior all through the holiday season is to be drunk. This drunkenness culminates on New Year's Eve, when you get so drunk you kiss the person you're married to. The hangover begins the next day and lasts through Super Bowl Sunday, when you lose whatever money you had left from Christmas by betting on the Toronto Blue Jays, who are not even a football team. The rest of the holiday season is spent adding up bills. 17. The Horrible Wedding. Beware of all enterprises that require new clothes. Henry David Thoreau. No matter how socially important a wedding is, and no matter how glamorous the ceremony and lavish the entertainment, everyone concerned should keep in mind that the purpose of marriage is to sanctify the solemn union of two souls in the eyes of God, and therefore the whole thing is a crock. The proper types of invitations. If possible, invitations should be sent to every person in the world. If you don't have every person in the world's home address, you can still send invitations to every person you've ever met or heard of. That way, you'll have a shot at the international record for the number of Cuisinart food processors received as wedding gifts. The current record is held by Mr. and Mrs. David Careerstein of White Plains, New York, who received 68 at their wedding in 1983. There are two basic forms of wedding invitations, the expensive engraved traditional form and the obnoxious cute Xeroxed form. Proper wording on the obnoxious cute Xeroxed form is, "Bingy and Babbo are getting married, finally." Just going to the Justice of P at the courthouse with Mom and Bingy's brother, so screw that part. But come to the big party. Twin Pools Country Club, 1400 Woodgrain Road, 7 p.m. till June 15th, BYO, Main Squeeze. The above, to be either hand-printed or cleverly composed in computer type and decorated with heart-shaped smile faces or ill-rendered drawings of Garfield the cat. The expensive, engraved, traditional form of wedding invitation may prove more practical in the long run, since the engraving plates can be altered slightly and used for the bride's subsequent weddings. Response to wedding invitations. It's traditional for the groom's friends to respond to a wedding invitation by getting the groom drunk and trying to convince him to run off to Tahiti before it's too late. The groom does not usually take this advice, and when the groom, after 2 or 3 years of marriage, actually does run off to Tahiti, he is rarely grateful for his friend's prescience. Wedding gifts. If you go to a wedding, you are obligated to bring a gift, usually a Cuisinart food processor. A more personal gift would be to absent yourself from the ceremony if your relationship with the bride has been tangled and ugly in a sexual way. This can be a surprising present if you happen to be the groom, but it's apt to be appreciated in the long run. The more traditional type of wedding gift is a large, ugly, expensive, and unreturnable thing made out of silver, cut glass, and mahogany, and engraved with some peculiar piece of information, such as the date and place of the bride's uncle's demobilization from the army in World War II. This gift object is not considered perfect if its purpose can be ascertained. The very best sort might be a punch bowl, or maybe an end table. The most modern gifts are a home AIDS test and advice, usually about running away to Tahiti, but sometimes about the tangled and ugly sexual relationship you had with the bride. The only gift that anyone ever wants, of course, is money. This is usually presented by the bride's family and can be given in two ways, either in a way that publicly humiliates the groom or in a way that publicly humiliates the groom later. Returning gifts. In case a wedding is canceled, the bride and groom should pretend there was a robbery. However, there is no excuse for canceling a wedding, since weddings are almost always canceled within a couple of years anyway. Therefore, a wedding should go forward under any circumstances, and then the bride and groom should pretend there was a robbery. Not only won't they have to give the gifts back, they'll get all the insurance money besides. Gifts to the wedding party. It is customary for the bride and groom to give something to the ushers, maids of honor, and other members of the wedding party. An excuse not to be in the wedding is a particularly thoughtful thing to give them. The trousseau. The trousseau was traditionally made up of the bride's personal clothing and items she brought with her to the marriage to help set up house. Towels, linen, glassware, silver, and so on. The modern bride brings a very different set of items to her marriage. 3 cats. 1 child from a previous marriage. 1 Conran's sofa bed with a Zuma bedspread stuck in the fold-out mechanism. 1 butcher block dinette set. The complete works of Barbara Cartland. 1 Cuisinart to match those received as wedding presents. 1 7x12 mud-colored post-abstract impressionist painting by her first husband's male lover. 3 framed drawings of unicorns. 2 hair dryers, both broken. 258 cute refrigerator magnets. 1 cat hair covered oriental rug. 1 Art Deco bathroom mirror. 1 Sony Walkman. 1 5-year-old Honda Civic. 1 box of loose tape cassettes, Hall & Oates, Air Supply, ABBA, and George Michael. 1 lettuce dryer. 1 half-dead ficus tree. 1 pair of $600 Maud Frison alligator pumps. 23 framed photographs of the first husband. 2 copies of the Beverly Hills Diet. 1 signed M. Scott Peck paperback. 50 Valium. 1 mismatched set of Melmac plastic picnic dishes. 3 antique glass paperweights. 1 crock pot. 1 Jane Fonda workout tape. one bill for $5,000 from her analyst. Making arrangements for the ceremony. It's important that a marriage be performed by someone with the legal power to do so. Otherwise, the two people are just living together and will never be able to get a divorce. Ministers, judges, and civil magistrates can all perform marriage ceremonies. So can the captain of a boat under certain circumstances, but not if it's an outboard. Maitre d's at expensive restaurants cannot perform marriages. Neither can the bride's analyst, no matter how high his fees are. Amazing though it may seem, marriages performed by TV evangelists are recognized as legal in most states, although home divorce club phone-in annulments are not. Try to hire an old-fashioned, cynical functionary who will rattle off the service at high speed. Marriage is just the right moment for a traditional touch like that. Avoid ministers with the contemporary vice of sincerity, who might stop in the middle of the ceremony and say, "Are you too sure about this?" Choosing a time and place for the wedding. The old joke was that the bride's father determined the time of the wedding with a shotgun. It's an interesting note on social progress that, metaphorically speaking, modern people hold the gun to their own heads. Wedding time is nowadays determined by the following factors. When two infatuated people receive negative AIDS antibody tests from their doctors during the same week. When a man reaches the age at which he can no longer face one more date with a Bond salesperson in shoulder pads who wears Reeboks with her Bergdorf Goodman business suit. When a woman has stayed single long enough to prove that she doesn't need to get married to establish her identity, and also long enough that all her girlfriends are married already. When a couple have lived together for so many years that they need something new to fight about. When a successful man needs to prove to bankers and investment capitalists that he isn't gay. When a successful woman needs someone to reassure her on weekends that she's successful during the week. When the palimony lawyer gives a bad prognosis. In the case of a very young couple, a wedding may also be set when both of them are under the temporary misapprehension that each will want to fuck the other more than 25 times. As for the actual time of day that a marriage takes place, it couldn't matter less. The couple will still be just as married when the ceremony is over, even if it did take place on a mountaintop at dawn. Incidentally, all the cute and novel places to have a wedding have been used up. This is why couples have returned to traditional church weddings, holding the ceremony in a large, impressive building where nobody in either family has been since the bride's mother's christening. Music. While it's perfectly acceptable for the bride's brother's performance art ensemble to play at the reception, when it comes to the wedding ceremony itself, you may find it hard to march down the aisle to the tune of "O Superman" by Laurie Anderson. Stick with Mendelssohn. And don't let the groom's sister play it on a recorder, no matter how therapeutic her drug therapist says it would be. Photographs. Normal professional wedding photographs are of no interest at all, and you might as well steal somebody else's. They all look the same, and this method is cheaper. The really interesting stuff that happens at weddings never gets photographed, though it might be fun to try. Hire someone with a Minox to circulate unobtrusively among the guests. See how many of the following shots he can get. Bridesmaids who've lost their underwear. Children under 15 throwing up from champagne. Old men who get erections dancing with the bride. Groom's father taking a leak in the potted plant. Examples of how rental tuxedos fit in the seat. Fight over whether groom will take golf clubs on honeymoon, etc. The wedding attendants. Ushers and bridesmaids are part of an important wedding tradition. The tradition is for the ushers to get completely drunk, wreck a couple of hotel rooms, and screw all the bridesmaids, and for the bridesmaids to get hysterical and often pregnant. If the friends of the bride and groom aren't brain damaged enough to act the part, they should try picking ushers and bridesmaids from each other's families. If even these people are too well behaved, Most cities have shelters for the homeless where winos and bag ladies can be enlisted. Flower girls, ring bearers, junior bridesmaids, and the like are relatives of the bride and groom who are too young to serve any purpose in the ceremony, but too hyperactive and unruly to sit in the audience. The bride usually has one friend who wanted to marry the groom herself. This girl should be maid of honor so the bride can rub it in. The best man should be that friend of the groom's with the best drugs, fewest ethics, and most ability to cause trouble behind the bar by giving bourbon and cocaine to the ushers, ecstasy and Kahlua to the bridesmaids, saltpeter martinis to the groom, a Mickey Finn to the bride's mother, and vodka-laced Shirley Temples to the 6-year-old flower girl. The best man's principal responsibility, however, is to talk the groom into running away to Tahiti at the last minute after all. Showers. The old-fashioned shower was given by a bride's friends to provide her with practical items for housekeeping. But now that brides are all career women instead of housekeepers, they've lost any sense of the practical and go to the office every day and waste time and money just like men. Therefore, the shower needs to be brought up to date. Perhaps a modern bride should be given a career shower, to which all her friends would bring fascinating job offers from major corporations in cities thousands of miles away from her new husband. Another idea would be an adultery shower, where the guests each bring someone the bride might like to have an affair with at work. Bachelor parties. Bachelor parties are a last fling before marriage. A young lady with very few clothes is usually engaged for entertainment purposes. The groom, the best man, and the ushers will all years later claim to have had sex with her, although actually they just grabbed her behind while she danced the boogaloo with her brassiere off. The only really good kind of bachelor party is the kind that takes place in Tahiti after the groom has decided to stay a bachelor. Wedding rehearsal dinner. These days, the honeymoon is rehearsed much more often than the wedding. It's not necessary to give a dinner every time you do that, although a snack might be nice. Dress for the wedding. To all appearances, the purpose of modern weddings is to make a mockery of traditional values. Therefore, the bride should wear white unless she completely overdid it at the tanning salon, and you can see her scorched butt right through the dress, and it looks like a huge pumpkin. The groom should be dressed to look as silly as he'll feel when he realizes what he's got himself into. Everyone else should wear something that looks good when sprayed with champagne. If you're a guest and want to have a little fun, you can arrive in tennis whites with a racket and a can of balls, and when the minister comes to the part where he says, "Speak now or forever hold your peace," you can stand up and object to the marriage taking place at the only time of day when there are courts free at the club. Wedding rings. Wedding rings should not be worn through the nose, no matter what Lisa Bonet does. Wedding publicity in the newspapers. If the wedding doesn't get any publicity in the newspapers, the groom isn't as rich as he said he was. The wedding ceremony. The processional. The customary order of the processional is ushers first, paired by height, bridesmaids paired by width, maid of honor, ring bearer, flower girl, bride and bride's father, and one confused usher who got there late. The interesting thing about the processional is how the members of the wedding behave themselves as they go down the aisle. The ushers should be manfully trying to suppress laughter over something filthy the shortest one said. The bridesmaids should be holding their stomachs in and trying not to look fat in the ridiculous bridesmaid dresses. The maid of honor should have a look of knowing irony and let her eyeballs roll toward the sky every couple of steps. The ring bearer should be pretending he's a stormtrooper and do a goose step down the aisle. The flower girl should drop the flowers and howl like a baboon. And the bride's father should push straight ahead with a fixed drunken stare as the bride counts the number of people there. The confused usher should run out and have a drink in a nearby bar until the thing's over. The recessional. The recessional is conducted in the reverse order, except that the groom now pushes ahead with a fixed drunken stare while the bride's father throws up behind the altar. It's considered bad manners to stick your foot out into the aisle and trip anyone until the recessional. Grouping at the altar. Everyone will crowd around the altar in a confused knot if the rehearsal was enough fun that they're all still hungover. Wedding attendants should not be concerned about this. Weddings are not like tag. Even if you do wind up standing right in front of the minister with the bride's dad breathing gin fumes in your ear, it will still be the bride and groom who get married. Giving the bride away. Brides are given away because it's illegal to sell them, and impossible to get anything for them in trade except an out-of-work son-in-law. The service. Gone forever are the days when the bride and groom were expected to write their own ceremony based on the Chinese Red Army wedding service and the I Ching. But it's still nice to modify traditional wording somewhat to personalize the ceremony. The following modification of the Episcopal service is given as an example. It's brief and practical, too. Note how time and location of the reception are given in the opening address to the congregation. The celebrant, facing the persons to be married, addresses the congregation and says, "Dearly beloved, we have come together in the presence of God to witness and bless the joining together of this man and this woman in holy matrimony, and to have some drinks and a big buffet dinner at Twin Pools Country Club, 1400 Woodgrain Road, right after the ceremony. The bond and covenant of marriage was established by God in creation, and the union of husband and wife is intended by God to prevent men from sleeping until 2 in the afternoon on Sundays and to comfort women with a greater Visa card credit line than they can achieve when they are single. Into this holy union, blank and blank, now come to be joined. If any of you can show just cause why they should not lawfully be married, just go and play tennis, will you? And they'll give you back the food processor." The celebrant then says to the woman, "Blank, will you have this man to be your husband, to live together like you have been for the past 3 years, and not get weird acting all of a sudden just because you're married now? And will you give him a break about leaving towels on the bathroom floor?" The woman answers, "I will." The celebrant says to the man, "Blank, will you have this woman to be your wife and not yell at her when you find out that she told her mother that the two of you will spend Christmas at her house in Dayton?" The man answers, "Okay." The celebrant then addresses the congregation, saying, "Let's get a drink." The reception. Wedding receptions differ according to types of excess, the type of excess being determined by religious affiliation. There is an excess of relatives at a Catholic wedding, an excess of food at a Jewish wedding, and an excess of station wagons at a Protestant wedding so that people have to park all over the grass. Everyone should get excessively drunk at any wedding reception, although Protestants usually run out of liquor almost immediately, and the men have to go in the country club locker room and get the scotch bottles out of their golf bags in order to get as drunk as they properly should. The receiving line. Everyone in the wedding party is expected to stand in the receiving line except the ushers and the best man. Even the most stringent authorities on etiquette have given up trying to get the ushers and the best man to behave. As you go through the receiving line, say, "What a lovely wedding," to each person. The correct response will be, "How nice of you to come," except for the bride, who will say, "Thank you for the Cuisinart food processor," and the groom, who will say, "Bring me a drink." It's considered rude to slip your dick into anybody's hand as you go down the receiving line, no matter how much you're tempted to do so. Toasts. The first toast to the bride should come from the best man, who is expected to avoid complimenting her on her skill in bed, at least in so many words. Remember that brides are not supposed to be congratulated. Congratulate the groom instead. it's probably the last occasion you'll have to do so until the divorce. Toasts should go on until the men have to go to the locker room and get the scotch bottles out of their golf bags. Do not throw the glasses into the fireplace if it's more than 40 feet away. Food. Wedding reception food, whether served at tables or presented at a buffet, should be stuff that's easy to throw up, like spaghetti. The cake. If the groom is a military officer, the cake is traditionally cut with his dress sword. However, if the groom is an arbitrage specialist or trader in the junk bond market, no attempt should be made to cut the cake with a subpoena. Dancing. Members of the wedding party are expected to perform duty dances with all sorts of old, boring, and physically repulsive relatives of the bride and groom. This can be more amusing than you'd expect if the bride can get her brother's band to knock it off with the Laurie Anderson and play something you can slam dance to. Throwing the bouquet. Just before the bride leaves to dress for the honeymoon, she is supposed to throw her bouquet to the bridesmaids. Some brides see this as old-fashioned and prefer to throw something symbolic of a modern woman's independent role in the home and workplace. A word processor, for instance. Kissing the bride. Kissing of the bride by male wedding guests is today considered sexist and demeaning, and a possible source of infection with sexually communicable diseases. Instead, slap her on the backside, as you would a football teammate. Seeing the bride and groom off on the honeymoon. Under no circumstances should pork fried rice be thrown in place of the regular kind, and shoes should not be attached to the back of the groom's car if the groom is still in them. Elopement. Elopement is a very unsatisfying method of getting revenge on your family for their objections to your marriage. It's much more spiteful to make them pay for an immense wedding reception, even if you have to marry someone they'd like to get them to do it. Second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh marriages. There is no rule of etiquette that says subsequent marriages shouldn't be as horrible as the first. Make them as elaborate, dressy, and expensive as you like. But don't expect anyone to attend past the third one. And that includes your betrothed. Wedding anniversaries. Wedding anniversaries are no longer much of an etiquette problem, since there are rarely more than two. Thus, the tradition of certain types of gifts for certain anniversaries, silver for 25th, gold for 50th, etc., has been rendered obsolete. Given below, however, is a proposed new list of gift themes for all the anniversaries a modern couple is likely to have. First, drug anniversary. Give ecstasy, sensimilia, retin A. Second, decision not to have children anniversary. Give fitness equipment or vacation accessories. Third, woman's career anniversary. Give something to husband to make him feel better about making less money than his wife. Fourth, decision to have children after all anniversary. Give cash. Fifth, divorce anniversary. Give moral support, sympathetic ear. Commonly asked questions about wedding protocol. Question. Is the bride's father expected to pay for all the expenses of a wedding? Answer. If the bride is good enough at forging his signature, he'll have to. Question. How should family members be seated at the wedding? Answer. On their asses. Question. Should I really go through with this? Question. Where can I get a drink? 18. The hip funeral. Squares who couldn't dig him, plant him now. Out where it makes no diff, no how. Langston Hughes. Death, like marriage, is a social event, and can be quite a chic one if the dead person is a rich parent and you inherit enough money to become fashionable. Dying yourself, however, is considered outré. If you must die, try to be considerate about it. Don't make anti-smoking commercials to be shown on TV after your death. Be certain your section of the Names Project AIDS Memorial Quilt isn't decorated with teddy bears or glitter. If possible, die in a manner that entertains people while also impressing them with your attributes. Choking to death during autofellatio is an example. And die young to create a livelier and more with it funeral crowd. Things to say when dying. If you're going to die in public, have something memorable ready to say. Oh my gosh, there's angels and God and Jesus and pearly gates and St. Peter and everything. Memorable if your family is Orthodox Jewish. Goodbye, Mary. I love you. Goodbye. Memorable if your wife's name is Sue. There's $1 million buried in the yard right Definitely memorable and good if the lawn needs to be dug up and reseeded. It was me. I kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. Memorable, but no good if you're under 75. Go fuck yourselves, the bunch of you. Trite, but will definitely be remembered by everyone present. Immediate steps upon death other than your own. First, make sure the deceased is actually dead. A rich parent can get very testy if you start building a subdivision on the grounds of her summer house when it turns out she's only taking a nap. Then tie up the book and movie rights. A rights deal is especially important if the deceased is young, well-known, and died of drugs or other causes with hot commercial potential. Don't forget television, both broadcast and cable, and such merchandising possibilities as T-shirts and novelty items. Christina Crawford's failure to license a line of wooden coat hangers is proverbial. Breaking the news. The family members and close friends of the deceased should be informed of the death as soon as possible after you've wiped your fingerprints off the syringe and called your agent. Someone who's not in the immediate family should be appointed to make the necessary calls, someone like your agent. But try to call the deceased's mom personally. What she says could make an interesting cover blurb or lead sentence to your book. You may want to make some of the other calls yourself, too, since announcing the death of a mutual friend is an excellent occasion for patching up old quarrels or introducing yourself to people you've always wanted to meet. Death notices. The standard form of the newspaper death notice is Morse Snort, Elliot, on January 3rd, beloved husband of Jennifer Windbrain Morse Snort and father of Paisley and Shadrach Morse Snort after a brief illness. Funeral at Le Mortuary, Little Santa Monica Boulevard, Beverly Hills, at 2 p.m., Tuesday, January 6th. No flowers. Donations may be sent to the No Nukes for the Homeless Committee. Box 462, Mill Valley, California. This is hopelessly dull and can be livened up thus. Morse Snort, Elliot, Bonkers. On January 3rd, somewhat beloved husband of Jennifer Windbrain Morse Snort, somewhat less beloved ex-husband of Annette Dimlit Morse Snort, totally unbeloved ex-husband of Leanne Van Lay Morse Snort, father of Paisley and Shadrach, who would much rather be called Betty and Jim Morse Snort, alleged father of twins, in Redondo Beach, after 14 magnums of Cristal, half an ounce of cocaine, 6 Quaaludes, 10 Valium, and a whole bunch of heroin. Funeral at Le Mortuary, Little Santa Monica Boulevard, Beverly Hills at 2 p.m., Tuesday, January 6th. No flowers. No drugs, either. His parents are going to be there. Donations may be sent to the No Nukes for the Homeless Committee, Box 462, Mill Valley, California. Information may be given to the LAPD. Where there's press coverage of a death, remember to be considerate of the deceased's family. Tell reporters, "Bonkers never touched drugs." This also shows consideration for his coke connection. But also remember that good manners mean being considerate of everyone, and that includes members of the press. Tell them, since it wasn't drugs, It must have been murder. This will give them something to write about and keep them busy tracking down false leads while you finish your book. Donation of organs. The best thing to do in the way of organ donations is to donate your organ to comfort the attractive young widow. The will. Video wills should have an MPAA rating no stronger than PG-13. Living wills should be very specific about the definition of brain dead and not so carelessly worded that they can be enacted by greedy heirs if your foot goes to sleep. The author advises against trying to make funny bequests. Everything novel and amusing that can be done with a last will and testament has already been used as a movie of the week plot device. An exception might be made if you can get your will spelled out by the card section at the annual Ohio State-Michigan football game. I leave everything to my 6 cats. Funeral arrangements. Funerals have lagged behind other social events in modernization. Many people write their own wedding ceremonies these days, but very few write their own funerals. It would be terrifically au courant to do so. A suggested form is given below. I'm dead now. Everybody who really loved me, take off your pants. Creativity has also been stifled in the matter of funeral locations. A more appropriate place for a modern funeral than a church or a mortuary would be a psychiatrist's office or the back seat of a car. Family members tend to resist such innovations, but if the deceased's mother and father really object, they can kill themselves and have any kind of funeral they want. Clergy. Modern people, of course, have no religion. It's very unmodern to believe in anything for more than 10 minutes. Since most religions are at least 500 years old, they are out of the question. The deceased's parents, however, tend to turn to religion for solace in the face of a death they cannot understand. Having no experience with drugs and gross sexual promiscuity, they can't be expected to realize that their kid should have been dead years ago. Anyway, a clergyman should be allowed to officiate at a funeral only on the condition that he be perfectly honest in his eulogy. Elliot attended Sunday school at this church intermittently. He stole a number of things and once cracked a choir member's skull with a collection plate he was employing as a frisbee. Personally, I hadn't seen him for 18 years, although I read about him frequently in the newspapers. Believe me, I was appalled. I understand he was good to his parents insofar as he did not publicly announce their identities and place of residence and thus drag their names through the mud with his own. It would be unchristian for me to say that I'm glad young Elliot is dead. I won't go that far. But it is beyond me what purpose he served alive. It's God's problem now. Let's get him out of here and into a cemetery as fast as we can. Wakes. In the past, it was customary for close friends to sit up all night with the deceased feeling horrible and creepy. That was before cocaine. Nowadays, everybody has already sat up all night with the deceased feeling horrible and creepy while he was still alive. Mortuary viewings. When the funeral service is conducted at a mortuary, there is usually a viewing period of several hours beforehand. Modern communications technology has had an unfortunate effect on mortuary viewings. Many people do not come to the mortuary viewing because they are under the impression that eventually the body will be sold to cable and they can see it at home later. Burial dress. The deceased should be buried in what he would have worn on any other somber occasion, such as a court appearance. The handcuffs can be hidden beneath the body. The funeral service. A funeral service resembles a wedding, except it's less serious because the consequences of the ceremony are already known and there's no danger of repetition. Ushers are used to show drunk people how to sit down feet first. Pallbearers take the place of bridesmaids, and the family follows the casket down the aisle. The casket should be closed for Catholic and Episcopal services and open for services at which teenage cousins are present who need to be convinced to stay off drugs. Eulogies given by friends instead of clergymen can be less honest, and in fact should be if there are DEA agents in the audience. For the service itself, a very modern alternative to a priest or minister would be the deceased's accountant. In the sure and certain hope of the resurrection to eternal life through our Lord Jesus Christ, we commend to Almighty God our brother Elliot, and we commit his body to the ground, earth to earth, ashes to ashes, excess personal income to tax-free municipal bonds at 11.5%. Pall persons. In a modern funeral, women as well as men may be used as pallbearers. Women, however, sometimes lack the necessary upper body strength to carry a casket in the usual way, and are therefore allowed to grab it in a leg hold. Procession to the cemetery. The long procession of cars from the funeral to the cemetery creates that most apropos expression of modern grief, the memorial traffic jam. The drivers of the hearse and cars bearing the principal mourners should make sure to use the drive-through window at McDonald's and not stop and park and interrupt the proceedings. The burial ceremony. The burial ceremony should be brief, especially if the widow has a dinner party to go to and needs to wash her hair. The body should be buried in the ground and not in a pile of leaves or by children with little pails and shovels at the beach. As an alternative to burial, the coffin may be cast into the sea from the deck of a ship, but not into the highway from the tailgate of a Jeep Wagoneer. That restriction is largely sanitary, however, and not governed by rules of etiquette. If you live in an area with good refuse disposal services, you may do what you like. Grave markers and memorials. There is no reason a person's grave marker should be any quieter than his life, but the weeping angels, shrouded virgins, and holy lambs of 19th century funerary sculpture are hopelessly out of date. Some more contemporary suggestions for large stone carvings are a telephone with the receiver off the hook, or a Mercedes-Benz turned upside down in its movie studio parking lot. Cremation. Cremation allows for more creative disposition of remains. The ashes may be scattered over the food at the deceased's favorite restaurant, used in the litter box of his cats, or spread on the icy driveway of a friend's ski house in place of rock salt, which causes corrosion in automobiles and is harmful to plant life ecology. Behavior at the funeral. The purpose of a funeral service is to comfort the living. It is important at a funeral to display excessive grief. This will show others how kind-hearted and loving you are, and their improved opinion of you will be very comforting. As anyone familiar with modern fiction and motion pictures knows, excessive grief cannot be expressed by means of tears or a mournful face. It is necessary to break things, hit people, and throw yourself onto the top of the coffin at least. A really novel way to show excessive grief is to dress up like the deceased, go home with his parents, and insist on living with them forever. If this seems to be too much, you can stand on top of the floral arrangements and urinate into the open grave while screaming, "Piss on you for dying, you asshole!" Nobody will be able to argue with the strength of your emotion if you do that. The key phrase, if anyone objects, is, "He would have wanted it this way." Given the amount of perversity rampant today, he may have. Memorial services. If the deceased's friends are too dissipated to make it to any part of the funeral, it is usual to hold a memorial service at a time and place convenient to their lifestyles. The purpose of a memorial service, like that of a funeral, is to comfort the living. Therefore, it is usually an affair so large, noisy, and boisterous that the deceased is hardly missed. Smaller, quieter memorial services may also be held, of course. A moment of silence might be observed, for instance, between the first time you sleep with the widow and the next time. Mourning. Public display of mourning is no longer made by people of fashion, although some flashier kinds of widows may insist on sleeping with only black men during the first year after the death. Normal social life, however, may not be resumed by a widow because there has been no normal social life in the United States since 1966. Section 4. The entertaining part of life. Let me smile with the wise, and feed with the rich. Samuel Johnson. 19. Real parties. Then why should we turmoil in cares and in fears, turn all our tranquility to sighs and to tears? Let's eat, drink, and play till the worms do corrupt us. 'Tis certain post-mortem, nulla voluptas. For health, wealth, and beauty, wit, learning, and sense must all come to nothing 100 years hence. Thomas Jordan. A real party differs from other social events in two ways. One, as much as anyone can remember, it was more fun. Two, no one can remember very much. Real parties are given for pleasure only and never to mark an occasion. There can no more be a reason for a real party than there can be an excuse for what goes on after it starts. Real parties vary tremendously in type and style, but all share certain things in common. Real parties don't start until after midnight. No friendships or romantic relationships should survive a real party fully intact. Neither should much furniture. Someone should have underpants on his head by 2 a.m. By 3 a.m., someone should have called the police. Someone else should have called George Bush long distance to invite him over. By 5 a.m., everyone should have gotten in cars and tried to go someplace else and backed into each other instead. It's not a real party if it doesn't end in an orgy or a food fight. All your friends should still be there when you come to in the morning. Most parties are not real parties, and some parties can never be real parties no matter how hard the partygoers try. Among these are office Christmas parties, wine tasting parties, book publishing parties, parties with themes such as Las Vegas Night or Waikiki Whoopee, parties at which anyone is wearing a blue velvet tuxedo jacket, parties at the homes of people who don't smoke, have subscriptions to commentary, own China figurine collections, or were ever in the Peace Corps, parties at which more than 6 of the guests are related by blood, the Republican Party. Where to have a party? There is only one hard and fast rule about the place to have a party, someone else's place. Small parties. Small parties are very easy to plan. An old Supremes tape, a gram of cocaine, a fifth of Stolichnaya, and some copies of Penthouse from the 70s when it was really dirty make for a perfect small party without the bother and complication of guests. Large parties. Large parties require much more than a gram of cocaine and usually other people besides yourself. Whom to invite? People with much more than a gram of cocaine. All neighbors within earshot. Everybody you've ever slept with, unless he or she insists on being accompanied by a lawyer. A lawyer of your own. Girls who take their clothes off at the slightest provocation. A homo to pick out the dance music. A bunch of people who've all married each other's former husbands and wives to get the mate-swapping mood established. Cute people. Loud people. People who get drunk fast. Some famous people. They don't actually have to come, just be expected. Some Kennedys. Some insecure people to make fools of themselves when the Kennedys show up. At least one person who will be deeply shocked by what goes on. Try not to be married to this one. As a general rule, figure out how many people the room will hold comfortably and invite 10 times that many people. Fun, like the flu, is contagious through close personal contact. Whom not to invite? Andy Warhol. Pat Robertson. Your parents. Music. All music necessary for a real party can be supplied by a half dozen Supremes records and one dance music tape selected by the homo. Volume is more important than content anyway. Volume is everything. If the volume won't kill songbirds in the yard and make the dog wet, it's not going to be a real party. Dancing. Teenagers and old people may know how to dance, but real people who go to real parties haven't the slightest. The only dances they even half remember how to do are the ones they learned 25 years ago. This is what the old Supremes tape is for. Stiff and overweight versions of the jerk, the mashed potato, the pony, the swim, and the Watusi. And after six drinks, everyone will revert to the twist. Another kind of dancing that's done at real parties is the gator, which is done only after 4 or 5 hours of partying and doesn't require any music at all. In order to do the gator, the woman should lie down and the man should lie on top of her, and then they should wiggle around like gators. The best way to do this is on top of a pile of coats in the guest room. Dishes and glassware. Dishes make remarkably bad frisbees, so it doesn't matter what kind of dishes you have at a party. But the glassware must be real glass because it's impossible to get a plastic champagne goblet to break in the fireplace with anything approaching a satisfactory noise. Remember, members of the upper class love the sound of broken glass. Maurice Baring. It's also hard to impress anyone by taking a bite out of a paper cup. And real napkins are important, too, since blindfolding someone for kinky sex is difficult with a paper towel. Professional help. Professional help can be had from AA. Paraprofessional help can be gotten anywhere with all-night emergency ambulance service. Party games. Most real parties are too chaotic to sustain party games, but every now and then you'll find yourself with a group of guests who are in the mood for this kind of entertainment. Indoor, outdoor sports. It's always amusing to play any outdoor sport indoors. Bicycle races, for instance, or motocross events if your halls and stairways are wide enough. Outdoor sports played indoors are properly played with appropriate indoor equipment. Dog soccer is fun. So is ashtray tennis and touch footstool. Playing golf indoors with meatballs and umbrellas is invariably delightful, as is duck hunting with real guns, if you can get someone to dress up as the duck. Strip Russian roulette. A single bullet is put into a revolver. Each player spins the cylinder and pulls the trigger. Anyone who doesn't kill himself has to remove a piece of clothing. Strip Russian roulette's combination of sex and death makes for a highly psychological game. Pin the bill on the restaurant. This is played when a real party is held in a tavern or other commercial establishment. The bar owner is blindfolded, spun around 3 times, and while he's trying to figure out what's going on, everybody runs out the door. Jump dick. Played with a penis instead of a jump rope. Kick the husband. This is usually played after the party. It is similar to kick the can, but is played with a divorce court instead of a foot. Party drinks. The traditional party bar. Long-established custom decrees that the well-stocked bar for a real party should be made up of the following. 2 6-packs of Miller Lite. 1 warm keg of extremely foamy Stroh's. 150 half-gallon bottles of screw-top jug wine. 40 bottles of gin. 60 bottles of vodka. 1 bottle of tonic. 3 ice cubes. A lime. Tradition may be broken with, however, and other supplies added if any of the party drinks below are to be served. Dieter's Delight. Mix equal parts of oil and vinegar with 2 ounces of vodka and garnish with a leaf of romaine lettuce. Champagne Urbana. Domestic champagne served in a University of Illinois varsity sweater. soak sweater in a punch bowl, and wring sleeves into guests' mouths. Good for reunions and tailgate parties. Dinner, mint julep. Urban variation of old Southern standby. Use a small glass to crush up two chocolate-covered dinner mints in a splash